looking at the recovery of the Australian economy, just how tough is it going to be for us to claw our way back to where we were pre-COVID-19?
Look, I think everybody is clear that it's going to be a long journey back. I think at the beginning of the crisis, the Prime Minister talked a lot about snapback, and that was a very attractive idea, but I think it's more realistic to imagine that we're going to be climbing out slowly, and that we're that the government is going to have to think about what sort of policy and regulatory settings it needs to put in place to make sure that there are as few roadblocks on the way back out as there possibly can be.
Now, before this all sort of happened, the government was very much focused on sort of balancing the budget, making sure that Australia's debt was paid off, and sort of these things that, you know, not necessarily everybody would agree with. Coming out of this one in terms of what we're going to look like for economic output, for jobs, for individual wealth, what kind of areas do you feel the government needs to focus on to best see the economy recover?
Look, I think the business community and the government has been clear that there are really five areas that they want to focus on. The first one, which is dear to my heart because I'm an academic, is skills and education. So making sure that the workforce has the right skills, can reskill to make sure that people can get secure and well-paid jobs after this. So that's the first area. Infrastructure is probably the second one. Tax reform at both state and federal level will be a big issue. Industrial relations reform, they've also foreshadowed. And the fifth one is this conversation that we're going to have today, which is about deregulation. So how do we make sure that the regulatory settings in the economy are working efficiently and that we're minimising where we can both the direct cost of regulation, so all of that sort of red tape production where people have to spend time and money complying with ever diminishing effectively regulatory measures, and also the indirect cost of regulation, which is to get in the way of competition and innovation. So how do we get rid of that to make sure that the Australian economy is as well placed as it can be to give people the opportunity to get back to work and get back to secure and well-paid work?
In your sort of view, how high a priority should be regulatory change in this recovery phase?
Well, look, I'm biased because I'm a regulation scholar. I think Australia has a lot of pretty inefficient and ineffective regulation. I wonder whether it's a legacy of our sort of history of being people who are quite compliant and quite inclined towards over-regulation. But we do have a very expensive and very repetitive, in some respects, regulatory system in Australia with three levels of government, each of whom will get involved in making a whole lot of rules about how people do business. And I think, you know, we're going to need to think about the effect that that's having on competition and innovation and take this opportunity, which is a rare one, to really revisit some of those design issues. So not just concentrate on sort of trimming red tape, which governments always promise to do but never seem to be able to achieve, but to think a bit more strategically about how do we regulate and in what parts of the economy do we need to restrict behaviour in the way that we do. So an example that people would really be able to relate to, I think, or maybe it's just me, is about the regulation of home delivery alcohol. So for a long time you've been able to get alcohol delivered from, you know, a big shop, big barn liquor retailer, but not from your local bar. And when COVID-19 happened, the New South Wales government said, okay, well, let's look at that regulatory restriction on, you know, small business being able to do home delivery alcohol sales along with your takeaway food, and they removed that restriction. So that created opportunities for those small businesses to grow and to compete with their big competitors. And that's a really good example of saying, well, you know, do we have regulatory settings that maybe are unnecessary or are anti-competitive or are stopping small innovative businesses from providing services that people would like? You know, where's the balance lie between protecting consumers from their own folly of maybe ordering too much home delivery alcohol, but allowing business to respond to needs in and to be adaptive to new conditions.
Well, that is an interesting example you poised there, because obviously these kinds of delivery services, or the expectation that, you know, we can kind of get delivery to our home from just about anywhere at the moment, is still a fairly new idea. So would it be fair to say, with some of these regulations, we really were playing catch-up, I guess, prior to COVID-19 occurring? And as you say, now this is kind of a reset. We're not going to catch up anymore. We do need to start from scratch.
Yeah, I think you really see it. So my main research area is in financial services. And for a long time, we've known that that's a very highly regulated sector. There are lots of restrictions on what kinds of businesses can provide different types of financial services. And they've tended not to respond to all of the technological advancements over recent years. So we sort of still regulate the financial services sector as if it looked like it did in 2005. But of course, with all of the innovation in technology and fintech, the industry could potentially look very different. It could have more players, it could be more competitive. And if you accept the proposition that appropriate competition will improve service delivery, drive down price and so on, you know, if we started to think about, well, maybe we don't need these rules that we needed in 2000 or 2005, because now that problem is solved by an app or a different form of technology or a different way in which customers interact with suppliers, because that's changed, maybe we could take our foot off the brake on some of those regulatory measures and you know, open it up to more innovation and more competition by revisiting those things. The difficulty, I think, with this process is not so much that people don't know what regulations maybe are inefficient or cumbersome or repetitive or all those reasons that we talk about with red tape reduction. We sort of know where the pressure points are. The real challenge for government is to work out how to actually achieve reform, because every government, whether they're, you know, Liberal or Labor, or they come into power and they say, oh, we're going to, you know, deregulate and we're going to get rid of red tape and we're going to remove the $250 billion of compliance costs that, you know, sit on the Australian economy through all of this regulation. But they have very high hopes, but they're kind of bad at achieving it. And so I think what we need to do this time around is say, this is a rare opportunity where we've managed to get rid of a lot of regulatory requirements without the ceiling falling in on us. We've managed to get federal and state government at the table and working together, which is another really important driver of success in deregulatory programs. So instead of just, you know, people turning up with the same laundry list of politically driven things that they'd like to have or not have, as we've done in the past, why don't we sit down and think about, well, if we were serious about deregulation, you know, serious about looking at the whole framework to see how it's designed, how it's administered, how it's enforced, if we sat down and rethought all of that, could we, you know, open this up to a more creative, more responsive and better value set of rules for business to operate under?
Well, it is an intriguing one. We live in intriguing times, after all. Pamela, thank you very much. Do appreciate your time this morning.
You're welcome, Sean.